Welcome, everybody. My name is Chris Canepa. For the last 7.5 years, I have had the privilege of being a pastor in another association church nearby, First Baptist Church and Health Center. But recently, God gave me the calling to be a part of the Baptist General Convention of Texas. And so my new role is going to be as the area representative to churches like in Health Center, like First Baptist Church in Dimmitt. For many years, Charles Davenport held that role here in the Panhandle for the better part of 15 years. And now I have the opportunity to join the BGCT as the area rep. And I count it an honor to be here with you today, representing our convention and being a part of your worship gathering, which had to be moved online because of this week's blizzard activities. I count it a real privilege to be back at a church that has personal meaning for our family. Of course, those of you that know our family well know that I married the youngest daughter of Carrie and Kathy Jackson, and Charlotte and I have been together for 26 years, and so we count it a privilege to be here with you today online. We were married at First Baptist Church of Dimmitt, so that church has a big part in my personal life, and it was also the church that recognized God's working in us and licensed us to ministry over 15 years ago. And so I count it a real privilege to be here with you today. And I want to say from the Baptist General Convention of Texas, a hearty thank you for how your church is such a ministry partner to our convention each and every year. Gifts to our convention from your church help us do amazing ministries. And in the last year, in the midst of COVID-19, you helped us to accomplish even more than we might have ever imagined we could have done. You helped camps like the camp at Floridata to the tune of $1.4 million across the state with cooperative program gifts. You helped pastors in financial peril across the state and ministries, especially to those pastors who were bivocational, to the tune of $790,000 in pastoral ministry grants. And so it's your generosity that gives us a chance to be able to do so many great things through the Baptist General Convention of Texas, to offer ministry to Baptist universities like Wayland Baptist University close by, to have BSM presences on private and state campuses, for us to be able to have ministry down in the River Valley, for us to be a part of international missions even beyond the borders of our state and our country. And so I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for your work as a church, and also thank you for your being a part of our personal life journey and our journey into Christian ministry as a part of the First Baptist Church of Dimmitt. Well, having reflected upon those things, I want to share with you another personal thing that happened for us. So here I'm in my new home where my family and I are now residing in Plainview. And another thing happened to me recently that was also interesting. And so I have a cell phone here for you, and I got a notice from our carrier, like many of you probably have, that if you act now, you are eligible for a special upgrade. And they told me that if I'll act sooner rather than later, they'll do it at such a reduced rate, they'll make it worth my while. And as I thought about that, I considered their offer, and I thought just a few dollars might be a great investment to have for a new phone. But then the realization hit me. Every time you get the chance to upgrade phones, it's not really something I look forward to. Some people maybe can't wait for the day when the new phone comes out and they get it. Or some people can't wait for the day when their carrier says, you're eligible for an upgrade. Why don't you come in and get your new phone? But I've found that for me, I usually try to put it off as long as possible. And I realized as I thought about that offer, there's a few reasons why. One, I don't want to pay for something when I already own a phone. And so I thought, God, I hate to go back into the process of signing up for another 2-year commitment and another 2-year commitment for paying for a brand new cell phone. Another thing that usually comes with it is when you buy that phone, you've also got to buy the case. Now, if you're like us, you maybe get the insurance on it. So if you drop it and break it, you can replace it at a very reduced price. But we usually put a case on it so that we don't have to pay that deductible to replace the screen or to replace the phone. And, you know, a good case isn't free either. And so that's another investment you got to make. And then if you're like me, maybe you have just a very novice level knowledge of how to back up your phone and its contacts. And so when you get a new phone, transferring all those things over, pictures, video, all the contacts in your phone, people's phone numbers, that sometimes is something that I don't do very successfully. I even have very technologically innovative young people in my house. And for them, sometimes that step doesn't always work like they planned either. And so that means then I've got to go back to the store, let them look at my phone, maybe swap it over with the other. And if it doesn't work out, then I've got to text people and say, hey, send me your number. I just got a new phone and the data contacts, they didn't transfer. Another thing that I realized as well when I thought about that opportunity to upgrade my phone is when you get a new phone and it has a new operating system, inevitably the screen's different. Sometimes where your buttons are different. Your home button's different. I understand some phones now don't even have a home button. And then it seems like your apps are arranged differently or they operate differently. And so honestly, I don't always want to have to go through the learning curve of learning how to use the new phone and everything that I've been doing for a couple of years now, very successfully, having to relearn all that. But there's a really big reason that I have gotten really hesitant over the years to upgrade a phone till it seems absolutely necessary. I like the phone that I know and that I like. And I like the fact that I know that if my phone starts to lag, or if the volume button quits working, if I hit the button and hold it down and turn the phone off, and then I turn it back on, it works usually like it's supposed to. You know, I learned that lesson as a pastor over at First Baptist Church of Health Center, especially many a times with our copier and with our Wi-Fi network. If all else fails, go unplug the thing, count to 10, plug it back in, and amazingly, in just a moment's notice, the copier runs successfully, and the Wi-Fi that was lagging or not loading, all of a sudden, it works again. I started wondering if churches want to do that, if they want to reboot, kind of like we tend to do on things like a cell phone or a copier. You know, the idea of rebooting is that you turn something off, and then when you turn it back on, it works like it always has. It works like you expect it to. It does the things you're always used to it being able to do. I wondered if churches were in the place where they wanted to maybe be able to do the very same thing, to reboot. For instance, just think about it, would you, with me? Coming to church on a Sunday and nobody has to wonder if you're running a fever so they don't have to point a thermometer at you to see if you've got a temperature. Or when you come into the sanctuary, no longer is a mask a conversation or a suggestion or a recommendation. There won't be stations where you're constantly having to say, oh, did I put on enough hand sanitizer? I just shook somebody's hand, or I just kind of extended it to them just as second nature, not really thinking about it. Or you walk in the sanctuary and there's no tape on any pews. And that means then you go back to your spot. You probably still know where your spot is in the pew, and the tape's gone and the masks are gone, and you go back to life as normal. I also started thinking about that, though, and I wondered, is that what God's looking for us, for the local church? And this morning, I have a text that I want you to join me at. If you don't have scripture with you, I hope you'll grab it. I have my hard copy of my Bible with me. I still read the paper version, but many of you, you may read it electronically. You might have it on your phone on the Bible app, or you may have it with you on an iPad or something. I want to ask you to grab that. Also, I've got a cup of coffee here. I usually go very few places and very few mornings without it. And if you want to join me in that, let's have a relaxed time together, staying in warm, and let's drink this as we study the Bible together. But I want to invite you to look with me to the Gospel of Luke, the good doctor, as the author of it. And let's go to the 17th chapter, and let's look there at a story you probably know very well. Let's identify what God might be doing with something like this time in our lives and this time in the life of the church. Join me, if you would, 17th chapter of Luke. Let's go to the 11th verse. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy, they met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and he thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" And then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." You know, this is an interesting story. And if anybody understands a quarantine, it was a leper. Lepers would have to, once they were identified as people who had the disease, they'd leave everybody they knew. If you're married, you leave your spouse. If you have kids, you don't get to be with them anymore. If you had a good, promising profession, it's no longer a part of your life. You moved to the outskirts of town. You'd probably be in a commune with other people kind of like you. Maybe you'd be in a commune of people that were lepers, just in the same condition as you. It's a debilitating disease. It didn't often operate like the acumen and the speed of a lethal injection. It might work on a person and start to damage their body over a period of weeks, months, maybe even years. Person's suffering would be extended, but make no bones about it, in the ancient world, to become a leper was usually a death sentence. It's as if a person was living and waiting to die. I want you to think about other things that a leper might miss out on. They might have missed out on a little bit of human compassion. Can't you imagine there are many times when they would have called out to somebody, "Please help us," and folks would have walked by and said, "I don't want to have anything to do with those people." "We're hungry. Can you help us?" And folks walk by. "Can you pray for us?" And maybe a priest wouldn't want to stop and give rites over a person. I'm sure they'd cried out a number of times in their life for somebody to have pity on them. And then this day, what does the text say? "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." And he heard their call and he responded. Now I think about Jesus and how he tends to deal with people like this. In most instances, when we see Jesus do a healing, he seems to touch the person, doesn't he? Remember when he was walking in the middle of the street, and a woman who was hemorrhaging for the better part of 12 years, she actually reached out and touched him. That touch promoted healing. Remember Jairus' daughter? There she was, laying dead. Jesus put his hands on her, and she was living. Remember the story of people that were blind, where Jesus would put his hand over their eyes? People that were deaf, he put his fingers in their ears. You remember those stories that we've encountered in Scripture? And then in this story, Jesus doesn't touch the leper. Instead, he says, "Go show yourself to the priest." Go show yourself to the priest. Now, at first glance, we might hear that. We might think, was Jesus saying, "I don't have time for this person"? You know, he stopped what he was doing and went to go help others. He took a 2 days journey to go resurrect Lazarus. And these guys ask him for help. And he says, "Go show yourself to the priest." Does that mean that we see a lack of compassion Jesus displays here compared to his other healings? Well, the answer to that's actually no. He's acting more like a medical practitioner that we might experience today. You know, if you've had COVID in the last several months, or if you're somebody who's been positive for it, you've got to have a physician say that you no longer have it for you to be able to be deemed healthy or fit to return back to life. Your employers may require that. School may require that. In the ancient world, if you're a leper, and you want to be able to go back into society, the priest is the one who declares you've been made clean. You get to go back to life as normal. So when Jesus was giving these guys this recommendation to go to the priest, it was a fulfillment of the law that we get from the Old Testament, one. And two, it was a chance for them to go back to their lives. Now, think with me for a minute, would you? Think about these guys. Can't you just imagine that for years they they had had a list? Can't you just hear them? The first thing I'm going to do if I'm ever well, I'm going to go back to my wife and give her a big hug. I'm going to scoop my kids up as they run to me. I'm going to sign up to coach their soccer team this year. I never did that before, but I'm going to be right there on the sideline with them every game this season. That job that I said I used to hate, I'm going to go back and tell my boss I'm ready to work. In fact, I'll work for the same money I did for years, and I'll give him twice the labor I gave him before. Or, you know, I've always wanted to start my own business. I'm going to do it. Can't you just hear the list the guys were rattling off? This year, we're going to host the family reunion. Everybody's going to come from the Judean countryside and come to our house, come to our neighborhood. Maybe you've thought about this too in our life, not as a leper, but as a person who's tired of COVID, tired of the statements, tired of the restrictions. You'll go to a football game and you'll say the kids don't have to wear gaiters anymore. Neither will the coaches, neither do the fans. You go to a basketball game and instead of having to buy tickets in advance or deal with limited seating, you'll just go to the door like you always have. You'll pull the money out of your hand and you'll pay at the door and you'll go pick the seat you want and you'll go to the concession stand and get the food you want and you'll be in the stands and yell for your child like you want or like your grandchild like you've always wanted. I could understand the desire for a reboot. You know, I've always been hard on these guys in the story, the nine and the one, but these nine and this one, they were given the ultimate chance at a reboot. They were given the chance of what we do with our phone when it doesn't act right, our Wi-Fi when it doesn't cooperate, our copier when it doesn't work correctly. They were given a chance to turn it back on and to do everything they're used to it doing. Well, then the story commences. Do you notice that? They go to the priest, or at least nine of them do. And maybe the one does as well. It doesn't tell us specifically, although the text is pretty clear that they were cleansed on the way. And one man, when he saw that he was healed, he came back. Did he go to the priest and then come back, or did he turn around and mid walking to the temple and come back to Jesus? The text doesn't tell us exactly. But what it does tell us is this man comes back to Jesus, and we see some words here. He thanks him, and he kneels before him, and he's got a loud voice. You know, forever I've beat up the nine. In this story, for most of my ministry career, when I've ever preached on it, I've beat up the nine. But as I've read it this week, I thought, you know, maybe I am the nine. Maybe I'm the nine, you know. You give somebody a get back into society free card, you're going to take it and run and go on back to what life as usual looks like, aren't you? That's what the other nine had done. In fact, they'd been obedient. The one guy who gets such a great commendation from Jesus is the guy who actually, one could argue, maybe wasn't completely obedient. If he didn't go to the priest at all and he comes back to Jesus, he didn't do what Jesus said. But then when he comes back to the story and he's kneeling in his presence, Jesus says, "Were not all the people healed? Where's the other nine?" I wonder if Jesus was wanting to just give these guys a reboot or if he was going to give them something else. Were they going to reboot or were they going to reform? You know, I've been thinking about that. Excuse me, folks, that was an accident. I've been thinking about that for the local church for a long time now. Are we going to reboot or are we going to reform? You might be here saying, well, what's the difference, Chris? What's the difference between rebooting and reforming? Well, when we reboot, we go back to things working the way we're used to them working. When we reform, we come back to God and we say, God, you have done something in my life. What is it that you want to do with my life now? What is it that you want to do with my life today? Seems to be what the one is doing. You know, I think a lot of churches are in a place where they're saying, I can't wait for this COVID thing to be over. And they start to say, I can't wait for the day when we have Sunday school again and we meet back in person face to face every week and we see the same people and we have the same conversations and we go through the same ritual that we did last week. We do it again this week. We go back to having coffee available on a regular basis when we come back into the church building. We go back to our regular times that we're used to in the church gatherings. I could see people saying, I can't wait for the day that we have potlucks again, or that we have cookouts again, or that our youth get to plan for youth camp again. And we're going to do this on Wednesday nights again, and we're going to go back to doing these things the normal way again. We could do that as a church, but is that what this story is telling us all there is for us to look forward to? Are we just going to reboot? Or is God asking us to do something even further than that? He's asking us for the chance to reform. Well, as I think at the story and we think about some of the potential differences, I want you to look back at the story with me and let's identify them. If we're going to be like this one who comes before Jesus, kneels before him, and basically says, Lord, you've changed my life irreversibly, and I give my whole self to you, and I want to follow you, and I want to do everything you have for me, and not just return back to the life as I knew it, but go forward with the life you have planned for me, I think this text has two things for us to highlight before we wrap up our time together today. They're not real big things that you probably never thought about before, but they're things that sometimes we have to be reminded of from the text. The first thing I think about is this, that we have to truly identify that which is sacred. If you look at this man here, he does. He identifies the sacred thing. That's why he's kneeling. That's why he's praising. That's why he's speaking in such a loud voice. He realizes he is in the presence of someone sacred, someone holy. Now, you know, the Bible has two different things in the Old Testament dealing with sacred. One was sacred altars given to us by God in the Old Testament law. It was going to be a sense of rituals and sacrifices that remind us what it means to be in the presence of a holy God, to recognize him for who he is, to accept the relationship he was offering us, and to make ourselves right with him whenever we had been wrong. But there's another occasion in the Old Testament during those five books of the law where people make for themselves an artificial substitute of that which is sacred. See, they've grown impatient with Moses on the mountaintop. They've grown impatient with God as they've left Egypt on their journey to the promised land. And so they don't give their time and attention to the sacred altar. Instead, they make for themselves a sacred cow. And if you know the story, you know, really, it's not sacred at all, is it? They make it into something that they think it is because it's made of gold. They pull their resources together and they give it to the priest himself. And Aaron builds it for the people. They even bow down to it and worship. But it doesn't mean that they've identified that which is truly sacred. You know, churches are going to have that decision to make. As we get closer to the next few months ahead, as people become vaccinated, as the Centers for Disease Control tell us, you don't have to worry about the things you have the last year to a year and a half. As ministries start to say, you know what, this isn't the worry for us, it has been the last year. we're going to have some decisions to make as a church. And when I say church, I don't just mean the people of First Baptist Church of Dimmitt, although I do mean that this morning, but I mean God's people, the church, in every local church like yours and in churches across the country and across the world. We've been given this unbelievable opportunity that most established churches don't get. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, are we going to just reboot, or are we going to let God reform? If we're going to reform, then we're going to have to let Him help us identify that which is truly sacred. Remembering those things I talked about, the altar and the cow. If you remember, when Moses came down from the mountaintop, do you remember what happened? He saw that carousing and going on, and he was indignant. They destroyed that cow. He turned it into dust. He mixed it with water, and he made the people drink it. You know, we have to ask ourselves, is there some sacred cows that we've held dear to us in our lives as followers of God or as church members at our local church that God may want to come from on high and reveal to us maybe they're not as good as we've always thought they were? And we're going to have to let Him disintegrate those and mix them with the soapy water from the kitchen and pitch it out in the alley. And let what remains be that which is the sacred altar of God upon which we worship Him and serve Him and make every ministry in our church and really beyond the church in our own lives with God, every word, thought, action, and statement be completely tied to bringing people into relationship with the same God that we profess to follow this morning. If we're going to reform, we need to start by identifying that which is truly sacred. Now, there's a second thing we see here, and it's the second step in helping us be a people who don't just go back to what we knew, but to move forward to maybe what God has. If you see this man here, he didn't just identify the sacred, but apparently he worships God like he never worshiped Him before. We don't know if this man was a God follower previous to this event in his life or not. We don't know if he was somebody who followed God closely and was stricken with leprosy. I can tell you in the ancient world, most people's opinions about people like him were that he was somebody God had it in for instead of somebody who walked closely with God. So his response to Jesus here, this person labeled a Samaritan who at least had some relationship knowledge of God, but maybe it wasn't the purest form of worship like they were trying to encourage people to follow down in Jerusalem. But he worships God like never before. He's bowed at His feet. He's totally sold out to Him. He's kneeling. He's adoring. He's completely engaged in who Jesus is. I wonder how we can worship like never before this year. You know, it was an interesting observation that I was a pastor during this last several months, like your pastor and like your staff and your church. It was something I noticed interestingly in 2020. From March to May, seemed like when you took away the NFL, college football, high school sports, people were told to pretty much stay at home and stay put. It seemed like every time we looked forward to the online gathering like we have this morning, it felt like people were not literally just a captive audience, but they were captive by the amount of engagement they had. I remember being amazed at looking online and seeing how many folks seem to be engaged in watching the worship service. Midweek services where we might have a gathering on Facebook or on Zoom, and how many folks would tie into that thing and be a part of a midweek prayer meeting. Even those who weren't doing it before the lockdown, they were joining in now in the months of March, April, and May. You know what else happened? As we took the shackles off society and we started to open things up 25%, 50% on our way back to a sense of normalcy, I saw some people's participation in worship gatherings, especially midweek gatherings, it kind of went back to normal too. You know what worries me about the church is the day's going to come when we're going to say we don't worry about masks and tape and all that and hand sanitizer. We're going to get back together and we're going to look at each other and say, look at what we get to do now at First Baptist Church. Class, and potlucks, and gatherings, and meeting at each other's homes. It worries me that we're going to go from that to now look at what we get to go do. And the mountains to the west are going to call our name. We're going to run there. And something like an athletic field or a lake or a fairway is going to become the place where we want to worship more than our local church after just a few weeks' time. I'm afraid that getting back to normal is going to mean getting back to being half-hearted about this thing. Maybe a little apathetic. Maybe glad for a few weeks that we got a sense of normalcy, but after that, it'll be like the Facebook broadcasts and the Zoom meetings. The newness will wear off. And we'll just want to kind of go back to how life was before. Our same rhythms, same practices. We'll be a part of things God's doing at the church if nothing better's going on. It worries me that that could happen. In fact, I think I already started seeing it happen even before we got back to normal. If we want to reform and not just reboot, we're called to worship like we've never worshiped before. That means we could make a decision in this year that we haven't made in a long time, maybe to really recommit ourselves to some personal devotional study of God, to spend time. You know, Bible app gives you a daily Bible focus. It'll send it to your phone. You can read it. Commit to praying. I noticed that your pastor started a ministry when I got to visit your church a couple weekends ago. Y'all have a prayer that's called Pray for Every Home. It's inviting you to pray for people all over your community. People you know, people you don't know. Praying that God would make himself real to them. Praying that God would break through into their lives. Praying that if they don't know Jesus Christ, that they would come into a knowledge and a working relationship with the Lord and serve the Lord. It may be something you've never done in your whole life. Pray for somebody else to do that. You have this opportunity put right before you, right now, to reform for the new year, where you get to be a part of a ministry idea to reach into your town and pray supernaturally for these folks. You can do that. You can intercede for them. You may not know them. You'll just have their name on a page, but you can say, God, could you please pray for this family that lives at this residence? Could you teach them who they are? If possible, could you make me cross their paths, or somebody in our church cross their paths where they could know who God is? It's your chance to worship like never before. This man did. He encountered Jesus. And if you think about it, if you really think about it, if you're somebody who's lived through COVID, we're just like these guys who were healed from a disease that had the ability to take somebody's life. We are. If you're somebody who's either recovered from it or stayed clear of it, you're just like the 10. God's seen you through it. Well, listen, I'm about to wrap this up. I know that you've been engaged a long time here, but before I finish, I want to remind you something I know about your church. I know First Baptist Church of Dimmitt is an amazing congregation. And I know a little bit about your DNA as a church body. And I know that you are movers and you are shakers and you are people that want to be productive and active as a congregation. You're not much about sitting around and just letting things lie. You're not about things collecting dust on a pew and church being like that. I know that about you. I think it's one of your great ministry strengths. You know, make sure when you come back and we get to put aside these things we've been working with for months, masks, tape, restrictions, limitations. Make sure when you bring things back, they focus upon reform and not just reboot. Make sure that what comes back to the church are the things that you know without a doubt are the things that lead people to worshiping God, to saving people from their sin, and to discipling those people who say they are followers of God. It's your choice. It'll be mine too. Do we reboot or do we reform? I hope you'll pray with me. Father, we're thankful for this text that teaches us once again what it means to follow you, to worship you, to serve you. And I pray for myself, and I pray for the listeners, and I pray for the entire church, and I pray for the ministry leadership of First Baptist Church. And Lord, I pray for people at Texas Baptist, and I pray for Christians all over the world, Lord, that as we come out of this time of COVID and we come back to a world that we hope is more like what we were accustomed to before it, I pray that our hearts might be reformed and we'll be less about rebooting back to what's normal for us. And we'll be about being reformed to what you want to do in our lives and through us. It's my greatest hope, Lord. And I praise you that you're giving us this opportunity. And I pray that you help us not to waste it. It is my prayer. In Jesus' name, amen. Friends, I want to say thank you for giving me the chance to be a part of your church this morning. I pray God's blessings upon the First Baptist Church of Dimmitt this day and the days ahead. Pray for your pastor and the entire ministry staff, your associate, your music team, your children's director. Pray that God would continue to guide and direct them. Pray for your pastor, especially as he tries to finish his doctorate. Support him and encourage him in that. I know firsthand what it is to try to finish that and be a good pastor. Bless him in that effort, would you? I look forward to the next time I get to be back with you, whether it be online or in person, but may the Lord bless you and keep you as a congregation, and may he make his face shine upon you and give you peace for the year 2021. I look forward to being with you another time in the near future.